from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, Apple, which has had serious criticism leveled against it in the past for working conditions of its suppliers, has for the first time released a list of its suppliers and also joined the Fair Labor Association. Does this mean more transparency for a company long known for its secrecy? And will it mean better wages and better working hours and working conditions for the many employees of Apple suppliers all over the world? We'll take all that up and more. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. A number of suicides last year and threats of suicide earlier this year at Apple supplier Foxconn has brought the Cupertino company much criticism over alleged inhumane working conditions. On Friday, Apple released a list of its supply chain, which up until now has been kept secret. Apple also announced on Friday that it had joined the Fair Labor Association as a participating company, making it the first technology company to do so. Apple conducted 229 audits of 156 cases of 97% of the company's supply chain with different factories over the last year in noncompliance of labor rights, finding 93 factories had gone beyond weekly working hour limits and revealing payment violations at 108 facilities. The audits also showed that five factories employed underage workers. And in this morning's opening Forum Hour, we want to discuss Apple's recent unveiling of the names of its suppliers and its audits and its joining of the nonprofit Fair Labor Association. What does it all mean for the company, those who work for its suppliers, and for other high-tech companies? And earlier today, we talked with Pauline Overeem, network coordinator of the Good Electronics Network, which is a human rights and environmental group based in Amsterdam. I asked her about the criticism of the working conditions in Apple's factories.
We are very much concerned about labor conditions in China in particular, but also globally in the electronics sector. And so at facilities that produce for Apple as well as for all other major electronic brands. And what you mentioned, that's what we have come across as well. Very long working hours, forced overtime, overtime that's not paid properly, unsafe and dangerous working conditions, so occupational health and safety issues. Samsung has also been negatively, had some negative publicity about that, so it's clearly not only about Apple. And one of the major issues that we have been trying to get attention for is that workers have really few possibilities to express their concerns or to be heard. That is, workers' representation is a problem, not only in China, in many countries, even the U.S., but also Mexico. Unionization is at a very low level. So whenever problems occur regarding wages or payment or holidays or overtime, workers have little opportunity to get their rights.
The workers really have very little, if any, voice at all, and that's because often there are no unions, or unions simply are not in place for the workers?
Yes, often there are no unions, or in cases, these are state-run unions, yellow unions, or ineffective unions, yeah.
What is your reaction to Apple at least releasing and making public who its suppliers are and also joining the Fair Labor Association?
We have mixed feelings. Apple has, in our opinion, quite a bad track record when it comes to engaging with stakeholders locally in China, internationally. So joining the Fair Labor Association as a multi-stakeholder initiative is a step forward, a necessary step forward, but it's too early to tell what this will lead to. The Fair Labor Association is a very credible initiative for sure, but it's very new to the electronic sector. It's mainly or only garment companies that are member to the FLA at the moment. So. And the electronic sector is a complex supply chain. It's a long and complex supply chain, and there's a lot of issues and problems in that sector. So it's not easy for FLA, we think, to deal with Apple being powerful and that sector having so many problems. We are cautiously optimistic about these steps, but there's a lot to be done.
That was Pauline Overeem, who I spoke with earlier, network coordinator of Good Electronics Network, an international network on human rights and sustainability in electronics. And Tim Beharin is with us. He's president of Creative Strategies, a high-tech research and consulting firm, and he was recommended by Apple. And I should mention that Apple declined to join us. You would think, Tim Beharin, that this would be good news that Apple would want to herald, wouldn't you?
Well, it is a step in the right direction, but as you're... the gal from Amsterdam has said that, you know, the tech sector is only one sector that's having this issue. When you actually deal with the suppliers, especially in some of these countries like China and India and, as she even pointed out, Mexico, there are a lot of cultural issues here. And the bigger issue that I get concerned a little bit, especially in China, is they don't have the equivalent of what we call OSHA, right, or some of the other government regulatory bodies that even ride these companies in this particular area. So it becomes kind of an open scenario where some of these suppliers, if they feel they can get away with it, they'll do it. And what Apple has done, at least it looks like, with not only making the list available, but also joining this group is wanting to go back, and not just they put pressure, but they want the public to put pressure on these companies to keep them straight.
But HP and Intel, Nike, they've all released lists, and Apple's been criticized even in releasing this list because they didn't list where the facilities are located or who the major suppliers. They only listed the major suppliers, and there were no secondary suppliers. In fact, no identity of where violations were found.
Yeah, that particular list actually, I think, lists all their primary suppliers. I haven't looked deep enough into what the secondaries are.
Well, there's a whole supply chain. Yeah.
Yeah. But having said that, looking at that particular list, those are the same suppliers in most cases that supply to almost all the other big tech companies as well. And to be honest with you, I talked to pretty much all the tech companies about this, and all of them go over there and try to ride herd on these guys on a consistent basis. And I know Tim Cook went over there twice and called the Foxconn CEO on the carpet over multiple issues. So they are putting pressure.
Yeah, Tim Cook has said publicly that he wants to do something dramatic about overtime and about these underage children, really, in many instances, who are employed in some of these supplying factories. So many are saying perhaps this is a post-Steve Jobs era. There's more openness, more transparency. I mean, that is one interpretation. But on the other hand, we asked them to come on. They wouldn't come on.
Well, but again, if you know Apple doesn't come on for anything, no matter what the thing is. So that's just a typical Apple corporate style. I don't know how to answer for that because that's just, I mean, I've been following Apple for 30 years, and that's just the way they are.
Do you think, though, that this will, well, not only make a considerable difference in monitoring and changing what's been going on in these supply factories, but that joining the FLA, for example, which is being heralded as major because Apple's the first technology company to do that, is how significant is that? Some are saying it's just symbolic.
Well, no, I think it's actually more than symbolic. It's significant because you now have a third-party group that actually is going to put pressure on it as well. And I actually think that you'll see other tech companies joining this group as well.
I thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tim Beharin. And again, Tim Beharin is president of the Creative Strategies, high-tech research and consulting firm, and he was recommended by Apple. Apple, put out a quick statement here, which I want to read. This is a sixth report. This is a new report, and we had some news around the FLA. We aren't the only tech company that lists suppliers. This is from Kristen Huguet of Apple. We probably disclose more details if you read audit reports. It's very detailed. Audits now, we in the FLA will be doing it. Every audit that we do is led by an Apple person. Sometimes we'll bring in different expertise. FLA, that is the organization that we've been talking about here, has been around for a long time, and their expertise came up in the apparel industry, and we're the first tech firm to join them. They publish the results of their audits on their website, so it's an unprecedented level of transparency for our agency. One of our executives is quoted in their release. Well, joining us for the hour is Katie Kwan. She's Associate Chair at UC Berkeley Labor Center. Katie Kwan, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you. Also good to have Kelly McElhaney, who is here with us in studio. She's Faculty Director and Adjunct Assistant Professor, UC Berkeley Center for Responsible Business. Welcome.
Thank you.
Katie Kwan, let's go to you first on this. How transparent is this?
Well, I think that the report is fairly detailed. But the question that I would ask upon reading the report is what the methodology was used. What methodology was used to come up with some of the statistics? For example, it says that freedom of association, there was 95% compliance. That's awfully high considering the countries where Apple's products are produced. And I would ask that, what is the next step for Apple? From here, given that there is such a big problem with working conditions and also explosive dust, what steps is Apple going to take to remediate?
How do you see joining a Fair Labor Association? We heard, for example, from Tim Verheeren that it's very significant and will make considerable difference. You see it that way?
Well, the Fair Labor Association is a multi-stakeholder association, so I think it's an improvement that Apple is joining a community of firms that is interested in improving labor rights. However, the Fair Labor Association has a mixed record in improving labor rights and has some limitations because it has both management and labor representatives on its board and therefore sometimes has to take the middle ground in remediation.
And do you see this, as something that will lead to more tech companies joining that association?
It may. I'm not sure that I'm not sure what plans the FLA has to reach out to other tech companies, but Apple is an industry leader, and it's a good sign that it wishes to recognize the importance of labor rights.
Katie Kwan, again, is Associate Chair of the UC Berkeley Labor Center, and Kelly McElhaney is Faculty Director and Adjunct Assistant Professor at UC Berkeley Center for Responsible Business. You see this as really quite extraordinary for Apple and very positive for the most part, I believe, don't you, Professor?
I do, at the risk of sounding unintelligent, but I'm very positive and optimistic about this. This is just a significant change in the way that Apple does business. They aren't, as we talked about, transparent. They have historically been successful with a culture of secrecy. That is changing. And secondly, Apple has not been a joiner. Apple has always been a standalone lone wolf. And the fact that they joined the FLA, I think, is very symbolic and very significant.
And you would almost predict, perhaps, that they will be reaching out, the FLA, and having more tech companies come aboard?
Where Apple goes, not only massive amounts of consumers follow, but all other tech companies have thus far proved to follow. So I do believe that'll happen.
And I think you sort of feel that Apple is in the front on transparency and sustainability, even though it's known for its secrecy and continues to be secretive.
I don't know that they I believe, but just in knowing Apple's, I'm a corporate strategist, so just from watching their strategy in terms of design, absolute heads and shoulders above other companies in terms of the amount of detail and the attention to detail that Apple pays and everything in their business, I have to believe that they do the same amount of superior work with their command over their supply chain. I think that where they have tripped up in the past, absolutely failed in the past, is just this complete lack of transparency and lack of voice. Do they have a long way to go? Absolutely. Do I wish that there were, several of my former students who actually work at Apple in the supplier responsibility group sitting here alongside of me being able to talk freely about this? I've asked previous students to come and speak to my class, and they are not allowed because they are not certified Apple spokespeople. So do I think they have a long way to go? Yes, they do.
Well, certified Apple spokespeople won't speak here. So
it's true.
I mean, but what about, I mean, the sense of purchasing practices and what I mentioned before is a supply chain, raw materials going down the supply chain. There's a lot that still does not hold up to transparency by any account.
But I think it's a step in the right direction. Look, these, if you've ever been inside factories in China or looked through the level of complexity in these supply chains, it's quite vast. I think you know, this is a giant step for Apple in the right direction. And again, where Apple walks, everybody wants to follow. So this is a really positive direction, I think, in this new era of what I call hyper-transparency.
Well, let's find out what you, our listeners, have to say about this. In fact, I'm going to open the phone lines and invite you to join us, and we do welcome your phone calls and your contributions to this conversation. You can join us now. Toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, and we welcome your calls. Again, toll-free, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, you can join us now at 866-733-6786 or send an email to forum@kqed.org or post any questions or comments you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also, of course, go to our Facebook page and really question how important is this to you, where and how your products are made, question for listeners, and the significance about the working conditions in those places. As we heard earlier from Pauline Overeem, Kelly McElhaney, it's very difficult to have a voice if you're a worker in one of these supply chain places.
It is difficult to have a voice, but I think it's changing. I mean, just my experience of having lived in China in the early 90s and now having the opportunity to work in China, these workers have so much more of a voice than they have historically. I think the problems are now much more in India and Bangladesh and Pakistan.
Want to comment on that, Kelly Kwan, Katie Kwan?
I was going to say that there are still some pretty big problems, though, in China. We know that last year there were over a dozen suicides in southern China, and we know that last week several hundred workers threatened mass suicide by climbing to the top of a Foxconn building, Foxconn being a major supplier for Apple, and threatening to jump off the building. So I think that the management practices in China still have a long way to go, and in particular, the workers complain about long hours, working over 60 hours a week and 7 days a week.
16-hour days, too.
16-hour days.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes only 1 day off per month. I mean, this is really, really intensive work, and so no wonder, coupled with the fact that in many of these factories, the unions are either heavily influenced by the company or the government, the workers really have no channel to vent their frustration. So I think that while working conditions in China might be slightly better than countries like India or Bangladesh, there is still a lot of improvement that needs to be made in China.
Well, not necessarily single out Apple here, though I guess we've done that to some extent, but how egregious compared, let's say, I mean, we keep reading about Microsoft and the Xbox and things of that sort. So how bad has Apple's record been? Because we certainly have not read about attempted suicides with any other company other than Foxconn.
Well, Apple, so these suppliers like Foxconn do business with all the major tech companies. And so they both, Microsoft has the ability to put pressure on Foxconn, as does Apple. And what would be good is if all the tech companies exerted zero tolerance for some of these inhumane labor practices.
The other thing, Kelly McElhaney, is that a number of these facilities have actually foreign contract workers. They're paid for recruitment, and they're paid recruitment fees. It's almost like a kind of shipping out, really, in some respects. I mean, how much responsibility should Apple have here?
Therein lies the complexity and just the depth and breadth of a supply chain. It's not just what's happening inside of Apple's walls in Cupertino. It's not just what's happening in the factory in China or Shenzhen, if that's where it is. It is a very vast value chain I prefer to use as opposed to just supply chain.
So one could presume that things under the Fair Labor Association will mean better monitoring and more close monitoring from your perspective?
I believe it absolutely will. And I think the bigger power of the FLA is that these problems are way too intractable, not only for any one company, but for any one industry or any one government to take on. And the beauty of the FLA is it is a multi-stakeholder approach.
Well, let's bring in some of our callers. We'll go first to Sue in Woodside. Sue, join us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning to you. So I wanted to call because I've actually worked for Apple as well as some of the other tech firms in the Bay Area as a manufacturing and a supply chain person as well as over on the design side. So I've got quite a bit of experience both in mainland China with Foxconn and its offshoots as well as in Taiwan before things started moving over there. The bottom line here is it is as bad as people say. I mean, I was over there when the nets were up and I heard the stories of all the people that were there while these things were going on. And I guess the net of what I'm trying to say here is, sure, it's fine that you're joining the FLA. These companies go through and do social audits all of the time, but there's absolutely no incentive for these companies to change. I mean, Apple is locked in with them. All the other tech companies are locked in with them because there's no opportunity to manufacture over here. So until we get serious about moving a supply chain back, it's not going to change over in China.
Well, let me ask you, Katie Kwan, what could be done to bring more pressure to create changes if indeed they're as intractable as Sue is saying they are?
Well, I think that Sue has a point in that there's really no incentive for the companies to change. In fact, quite the opposite. There's an incentive to increase productivity, which would end up worse for workers. You know, I think that what has to happen is that workers have to have a voice at the workplace and have the ability to speak for themselves and communicate with the employer, preferably over a bargaining table, so that a stable labor management relations develop. This is really the only way that over the long term workers can assert their rights at work. And you know, it's important to have third party monitoring, and it's important that the company take responsibility. But ultimately, what really should be happening is a two-way conversation between the workers and the employers over the terms of employment.
Well, how realistic, Kelly McElhaney, is bringing things like collective bargaining into some of these factories, particularly in places where the culture is so adamantly opposed?
You know, I don't, I guess I'm not a big believer that that is very realistic. I think we have to work within the terms of realism, and just culturally it is not what has been done. And I also don't think that collective bargaining and unions are the only solution. I think enlightened management, smarter business is a different solution that we're seeing working.
Let me thank the caller, and we'll go to another of your calls. Tony, join us. You're on.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to make a couple of points, one of which is that, you know, Apple is a small portion of the industry. I mean, they might have 10% market share in computers sold worldwide, maybe 5 to 10% of all phones sold worldwide. So while people here in the Silicon Valley pay a lot of attention to them, worldwide they're a tiny fraction of the electronics industry. And then the other thing I wanted to point out was, you know, yeah, I guess that's my main point.
All right. Well, I thank you for that main point. We're coming up on a break, but if you'd like to join us and make a point here or just join the conversation, let us know what you think about really the concerns over working conditions and Apple's coming out and actually revealing its suppliers. Feel free to join us. It's toll-free. 866-733-6786 is the number to do that. Or you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our Facebook page or post on our website, kqed.org/forum. We spoke earlier with Pauline Overeem of Good Electronics Network and Tim Baharin of Creative Strategies. We'll continue with Katie Kwan, who's with us by phone, UC Berkeley Labor Center, and Kelly McElhaney, from the who is with the UC Berkeley Center for Responsible Business. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Apple is working to head off criticism over how workers are treated in their supply factories. And for the first time, they've actually made public their major suppliers. And they also say they've increased factory inspections. But last week, some workers at a major supplier in China threatened to kill themselves for better working conditions. And Apple has now joined up also with the Fair Labor Association. And we're talking about what all that means, not only for Apple, but for you as consumers, for the workers, for really Silicon Valley and the high-tech companies, the tech companies throughout the country and throughout the world. We were joined at the top by Pauline Overeem, a network coordinator for Good Electronics Network, an international network on human rights and sustainability in electronics. He was with us from Amsterdam. And Tim Bowering spoke with us also, someone recommended by Apple, a president of Creative Strategies. And with us for the hour are Katie Kwan, associate chair at UC Berkeley's Labor Center, and Kelly McElhaney, who is faculty director and adjunct assistant professor at UC Berkeley's Center for Responsible Business. I'm going to bring you, our listeners, into this more. And again, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment and make your contribution. That is not your contribution to public radio, but your contribution to this hour. And you can also, of course, join us by going to our Facebook page. Let's go to Hollister and bring Gary on. Gary, welcome.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
My first thought about all this is that, you know, ultimately, I remember back in the days when I guess it was sports shoes, that whole subject of basically
Nike.
Captive labor. Yeah. Remember?
With Nike mainly, yeah.
But I think, you know, the public is ultimately the lever here. I think if, you know, if this heightened awareness has any impact at all, if the public says, hey, we've got an alternative to buy a product that comes from you know, proper working conditions for the subcontractors, and then they vote with their feet, I think that has the ultimate power, because at the end of the day, this is still about price. I mean, if the public isn't willing to pay the price for people to make proper wages, then all of this, frankly, goes no place.
Well, let me hear from Katie Kwan on that. What about getting the consumer more educated and, well, you know, there are consumer boycotts that have been quite effective.
That's true. Consumer boycotts did force Nike, Gap, and Levi's and some of the other major brands in the apparel industry to adopt codes of conduct nearly 20 years ago. And so they've been disclosing their suppliers for many, many years now. However, after 20 years or so, we haven't seen all that much improvement in the working conditions in apparel factories. In fact, around the world, we still see some of the same problems that we saw 20 years ago. There are situations where consumers, however, can exert some leverage, and we've seen this in university codes of conduct, where universities require licensees to force their suppliers to adhere to labor standards. And that seems to have had some better success. There are also procurement policies adopted by certain cities where the cities say, you know, the uniforms that are worn by its city employees can't be produced in sweatshop conditions. And there is some effect there as well. But the problem with consumers is that they're not really an organized force. And that's why I go back to the workers themselves. And even though I agree with Kelly that collective bargaining is not the only solution, I think it is important when you have a couple of hundred workers on the roof threatening to jump off that you actually give them a voice at the workplace.
Want to weigh in here, Kelly McElhaney?
Yeah, I think it's just very interesting in the midst of the Occupy movement, and certainly Time magazine naming the protester as the Time Person of the Year. I agree with Katie. It's difficult to get consumers to really coalesce and act in mass. But let's not forget, employees of Apple are consumers. So it was not lost on me that when the Tim Cook's first mode of communication was to his employees about what they were doing in terms of transparency. And I have to believe, particularly because I teach in this world of MBA students, and they are demanding this from their employers, this level of transparency, this ability to work for a company that's making the world a better place, that's contributing not only financially, but socially and environmentally. So there are lots of different breeds, if you will, of consumers. And we have seen in the last year that they have coalesced and had some impact on corporate behavior.
Well, here's a comment on our website. Why not put pressure on China? And why not put pressure on China? Katie Kwan?
Oh, well, lots of people are putting pressure on China. And
as much as it can be.
There's been pressure from American unions on trade issues and on other in other ways too. So I think that there is pressure that's being put on China, but the problem is that China's not the only problem, and the supply chain or the value chain is vast and worldwide. So singling out China has some danger attached to it as well, because as we know, in the 50s and 60s, when Japan was singled out as a threat to U.S. workers' jobs, some ugly racist attacks took place. And so singling out one country can lead to some unfortunate social consequences.
I have a listener here who says, why do you refer to Foxconn as Apple's factory? It's an interesting question. Whose factory is it, really? I mean,
it's Foxconn's factory.
It's Foxconn's factory. Correct. And so Apple can, to some extent, say, that's not our business. I mean, it's just our supplier. It's not necessarily under our control. And for quite some time, they had been saying that.
Yeah, right. They have been saying that. So that's why the publication of this report is a step forward, in that they acknowledge some responsibility for the situation in supplier factories. In fact, the report points out that there was some discrimination against women who were pregnant taking place in some of the supplier factories, and they absolutely put their foot down and said the suppliers could no longer do that. So I think that we have to realize that there's a tremendous financial investment in these supplier factories, and the suppliers are really beholden to the investors like Apple and Microsoft, and so they are willing to comply with the mandates presented by brands like Apple.
Here's Tom from Los Gatos. Join us, Tom. You're on.
Great show, Mike, and thanks, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. I don't want to single out China. I want to include everyone in this particular issue, because I know it's just as bad in the United States. But anyway, there's a fair actual mission of name. It's okay.
I don't think you can compare China to the United States, Tom, all due respect.
Well, if you look at the Internet, all the pornography and even child pornography on the Internet, it's a worldwide problem. And I think a lot has to do with the tastes of our local people here in Silicon Valley. It's also just a tool to sell their, you know, computers and so on. But anyway, I heard from Dr. Dean Adel. Everybody knows him, of course. That when he's visited China, he's noticed extreme proliferation of prostitution. And I can only think a lot of this has to do with the factory girls, you know, rushing into the cities from the countryside, maybe getting a temporary job and then getting laid off and being forced into prostitution by the local pimps in partnership with their customers in the United States. So I think the top priority should be to free the women of Asia and the United States and Mexico and the whole world, just like we went into Iraq, supposedly to free the women who were, in supposedly rape camps in Bosnia, and same situation.
Well, certainly sexual harassment is a major problem in a lot of these companies, as we've said. I don't know about prostitution, but many of these people who go to work in these factories, Kelly McElhaney, are, you know, poor rural people, and there's no other work really available for them, and they can be exploited in all kinds of ways, in every way imaginable, really.
Absolutely, and you have to understand this, you know, China is in the midst of its American dream, so to speak. I mean, these workers view factory work as sort of the ticket to the Chinese dream of becoming middle class, of having buying power. But back to the caller's point, I mean, he should be happy to know that in California, Senate Bill 657 took effect January 1st, which requires any company who has supply chain or does business in the state of California to release any all of their suppliers who have violations in terms of sex trafficking or human slavery. So there are things happening in a very positive direction to the caller's point.
Well, here's a listener who says, just last week, a factory in Indonesia settled with 4,500 workers making Nike shoes, nearly $1 million. They had been cheated for 18 years, 10 of those years monitored by the FLA. Katie Kwan, you want to comment?
Well, it just goes to show that this is a very complex situation, and that monitoring, there's all different forms of monitoring, and some forms are good, some forms are not so good, some forms are detailed and others are not. I don't know how the FLA was monitoring the particular factory in question, but it is true that even though factories are monitored...
Well, forgive me, but who pays to do these audits?
Well, okay.
It's a corporation, isn't it?
No, well, there are different types of monitoring. So, and this has been a big debate over the past 15 years in the anti-sweatshop movement. So, some companies have their own internal monitors. Most do. So, Gap, for instance, has 200 auditors around the world directly employed by Gap. Others use third-party monitors and pay them. Others require the suppliers to actually pay the monitor. Some join organizations like the FLA or other kind of monitoring associations, and they sort of double-check what the internal monitors do.
Again, I have to come back to the fact that Apple never listed where these facilities were located or listed only major suppliers. There were no secondary suppliers. And there wasn't even any identity of where it found the violations.
Yeah.
Kelly McEnany, what do you make of that? I mean, that's not transparency.
It's not complete transparency, you're right. It's a step in the right direction, but I have to believe, and I'm very confident that Apple knows exactly where the violations are. I'm quite confident that they know exactly where the factories are.
Why not make it public then? I mean, they listed violations and numbers and so forth.
Yeah, I agree. They still have a ways to go. There's no question that this is not a perfect step, but it is a massive first step.
Well, listener writes, I hear Apple makes profits of $300 per phone. Is it too much to ask for them to make only $200 and use the remaining $100 to make working conditions better? And another listener says, my question is, why are we discussing only Apple suppliers? If this is triggered by This American Life program last week from the supplier in question, Foxconn, a multinational manufacturer of electronic components that supplies many major American companies, including Amazon, Cisco, Dell, HP, Intel, IBM, Microsoft, Nokia, Sony, Ericsson companies, and Toshiba, and by the way, we mentioned some of these earlier, among many others. Apple's market share, though rising, is minimal compared to some of these. HP has 21% of the laptop market. Dell has 15%. Apple, 4.6%.
Apple's the most admired brand, arguably, in the world, so I think it's clear why we're singling out Apple, but in terms of real-world solutions, the caller is exactly right. I'm sorry, the writer in is exactly right. It's a collective problem, and that's why things like the FLA, the Electronics Industry Citizenship Coalition, of which Apple is a part, but which brings together the broader swath of tech companies, these have to be part of the solution because it is a collective problem.
Here again is another web comment. The value added to an iPhone by the work done at Foxconn is only $4. The Apple profits are the vast majority of the price. If Apple would share the wealth with the workers, conditions would be a lot better. Another listener says, Katie Kwan, this character, Ms. Kwan, must have some comfy hours as an associate chair. What's wrong with a 16-hour day? Ask an investment banker or a Facebook coder. Or to draw a pattern in 1-800-1900-AMERICA, people sacrifice two in crappy mills. Changing China and the idea of hard work, a voice in the workplace, assert their rights. In a free market economy, an employee can leave if he or she doesn't want the wages. I'm sure you've heard that argument before, haven't you? Foxconn doesn't prevent employees from leaving, so this argument goes.
Well, all I can say is that when you're really working 16 hours a day, every day for the whole month with only one day off, you really feel like you're sort of imprisoned in a system. And you can't get out of because you have few other options to work. And, you know, I think that while some of us work long hours by choice, I think that when you don't have any choice, you really feel, like, very frustrated. And that's why folks were jumping off the top of the building.
Well, here again is a reference from a listener on our website to the excellent piece that appeared on This American Life. The listener says excellent piece on This American Life about this very topic. They said that Apple's factory inspections were always known in advance. They would pull all the child workers off the line for the day, and unless that is fixed, all else is window dressing. And they did cite some underage workers, but again, we don't know where or we don't know the details.
I'd like to comment on that,
yeah.
Because the report says that workers were interviewed, but what we found over the past couple of decades in monitoring sweatshops is that it's really important to interview workers off-site because inside the factory, workers are really threatened by the supervisors. Supervisors often tell the workers what to say to the auditors when they come in.
Forgive me, Katie, but I've been reading a lot about this, and there are so many references to what is described as militaristic culture within these factories.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much what you're talking about, isn't it?
Right. Well, not only that, but, you know, actually standing together and doing chants in the morning and all that kind of stuff. So it is militaristic in many, many ways. And but getting the workers to speak truthfully to the auditors really requires that the workers trust the auditors and don't fear retaliation. And that's why sometimes companies use non-governmental organizations who are local, who already have the trust of the workers to carry out thorough third-party audits.
I'm looking at some more of the emails coming from you, our listeners. Here's Eric in Saratoga who says, recent caller asked why Apple is so important because they are such a small market presence. What callers may not know is that Apple is the largest purchaser of semiconductor electronic components in the world by a larger margin. If you add number 2 HP and number 3 Dell together, they are still less than Apple. This means Apple controls a huge market share in terms of purchasing. Ken from Livermore says, great show, a huge contrast from the Steve Jobs show a few weeks ago following his death. The comparison of Jobs to great people in history seems a little hollow now after hearing about working conditions abroad. Not a techie myself, but like Nike shoes and various other imported products, I'd feel a little slimy owning an Apple product, just my two cents. And there is that kind of sentiment coming through here, as one might expect. A web comment that says Apple is as unconvincing as ever. Another listener writes, quality is about doing it right when nobody's looking. Apple is just making excuses, and as we can see, a good deal of criticism, to put it mildly. Let me go to more of your calls in the meantime. Casey, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah, I wanted to, I don't know what the living conditions are of these people before they go to the factory, but it seems to me like going back to the forcing them into it, I think it's got to be way better than what they're coming from, or I'm asking if it is way better than what they're coming from, and maybe that's why they're willing to put up with so much of this stuff because it's so much better than their life was.
Well, they are getting work, Katie Kwan. Again, we hear that argument that these are poor people from the rural boondocks who haven't had any accessibility to any kind of work to put food on their table, and yet the working conditions are inhumane. There's the paradox.
Well, but why does that mean that the working conditions have to be humane? Inhumane.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Even though they might have a job and now earn cash instead of working as a farmer, it doesn't mean that they need to be treated indecently. And several others of your callers pointed out that Apple gets a huge profit from every item that it sells, and so sharing some of it with the workers isn't such a bad idea.
Here's Sarah from Mill Valley who says, can you comment, and I don't know if you can help us here, Professor McElhaney, on blood minerals used to produce smartphones. Is there any pressure that consumers apply to demand that companies like Apple reveal where these minerals come from?
There is pressure. This is a big issue in the tech supply chain right now. There are coalitions. I know that the Electronics Industry Citizenship Coalition, the EICC, is on top of this. And absolutely, consumers can apply pressure. But again, it's one of many levers that have to come together for the pressure to really take effect.
And we go to another of your calls. Jason, join us. You're on the air. Good morning. Welcome to Forum.
Good morning. I have a question for either of your guests. Apple supplier Foxconn depends tremendously on Apple's business. I mean, it makes a lot of money. given the importance of their relationship and the amount of money that both parties really make from that, why isn't it possible for Apple to put Apple employees as inspectors in Foxconn factories 24 hours a day? Would Foxconn reasonably balk at that? I'll take my answer off the...
All right, thank you for the question. Kelly McElhaney.
You know, it's a great point that Jason brings up. I mean, the supplier-purchaser relationship is built primarily on trust. And nobody, Apple does not want to see this happen again, these mass suicides, or even these, what I call the China version of the Occupy protest, these workers coming together to threaten suicide. So there are other venues that we can take or avenues we can take here, like preferred supplier programs. So suppliers who have the fewest amount of violations getting more and more business from a company like Apple. So there's a multiple... It's not a single solution here.
Katie Kwan?
I think that the suppliers probably have Apple people in their factories quite often to monitor quality, to monitor the specifications to production, and so forth. And It wouldn't be unusual to see Apple employees doing more auditing of labor conditions. However, I think that Foxconn probably, because it has its own culture, and many of these suppliers do, they would prefer to have the investors at a distance.
Here's a web comment from a listener who writes, forget China. Let's talk about working conditions in their Cupertino campus. Apple is famous for employing young people and burning them out. I specifically know people there who work all night long for a year, okay, dinner is provided, to meet their aggressive top-down schedule. Family life, mothers, is not a priority there. All so you can get your favorite phone pad in time and Tim Cook can justify his $380 million compensation. Name withheld for fear of reprisals. Another listener, Nick in Berkeley, writes, I object to the comment that the consumer should organize to put pressure on this issue. When I buy a $400 tech gadget, I expect the company that has sold it to take leadership on ensuring that everyone up the supply chain is treated fairly. This is their moral obligation. And in the modern world, can't our leading technology companies adopt the highest moral ground without consumer boycotts? What would doing so change in the final consumer price of the product? $5 to $10 per iPhone is nothing. If we have to wait for every company to respond to consumer complaints, why doesn't Apple, Motorola, etc. just offer you two phones, one for $400 made with a sweatshop labor, no monitoring, and one for $410 sweatshop free? Let me get another caller on here, and that's you, Susan. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having this discussion. It's very important. And I just want to ask the guests on your show what we can do about it. I just heard the comment from an email that you read, but it seems so disturbing that we accept this. It really is just greed, but we're creating billionaires while people really are starving and hungry and lives are being wasted, you know, in their 20s and 30s in these abusive conditions. And we just have a standard here in this country where we idolize someone like Steve Jobs. I give him credit for his smartness, but the jobs that he's offshore, the stigma in other countries and what people are going through, and we have put him on a pedestal while he's taken jobs away from people here and abuses people abroad through the Apple company and other companies as well, not just singling him out. But what can we do to help? What can we do about this? Because I, for one, am calling from an Apple phone, and I feel that there's got to be something more that we can do as consumers to raise expectations of what companies should do to treat their workers fairly.
Well, let me go to you here, Kelly McElhaney, because you were saying before, you and Katie Kwan sort of cross swords on this, you were saying consumer power really doesn't have, well, the possibilities pragmatically to come together and coalesce. But if you were offering some hope to consumers, where would it be?
I think our buying power, our purchase power is quite significant. I think our voice is incredibly significant. So just writing letters to Tim Cook, sending emails, getting the conversation going. I know that I had the bad fortune of switching to Apple just 3 days before the Foxconn suicide story broke. And as I went into my local Apple store to buy a VGA adapter, I started a conversation with the Apple employee about Foxconn. And I was absolutely blown away by this retail floor employee's knowledge of Apple's response to the Foxconn situation, and he told me about the workers that they were sending in, the mental health professionals, right after the suicides occurred. He told me about the employee assistance program that Apple had helped Foxconn launch, and this was 3 days after the story broke. So I do think you can use both your purchasing power and your voice, and I don't want to indicate that consumer pressure has never worked, because with Nike, it was students against sweatshops.
And it was very effective.
Students, very effective. So, you just have to try to use your voice and work in tandem with other levers.
Well, here's a listener who writes, my company is partially vertically integrated and operate our own plants for roughly the final 50% of the production process. We don't have full control of our suppliers, but for many components, we can shift to our own production when a supplier missteps. While we can't do that overnight, it does provide great leverage to keep worker conditions and product quality where they should be.
You know, and I have to say, I served on UC Berkeley's Supplier Code of Conduct Committee, and with the FLA, we dropped Russell Athletic for an entire year because of sweatshop violations that FLA brought to us. And when an 11 campus stores drop a supplier like Russell, Russell absolutely paid remuneration, and changed their behavior in 1 year.
Well, I think you both remain somewhat optimistic, don't Katie Kwan, you too?
Well, I do. I may not have sounded like it throughout this entire conversation, but this really is a step forward for Apple and the entire IT industry. So, I think that the disclosure list is not complete and should be made more complete. I think that the way it produces its report, it should have more details in it, and also improve its methodology in interviewing workers and so forth. But I think it's a step in the right direction.
And purchasing practices, lest we forget.
And purchasing practices.
Yeah. We've certainly covered a lot about working conditions at Apple suppliers, but lest we forget, there's been a good deal of concern about purchasing practices in general and monitoring. I want to thank all of you who joined us this morning. You, our listeners, callers, emailers, web posters. Thanks to Pauline Overeem, who joined us earlier from Good Electronics Network, who is with us from Amsterdam, and to Tin Baharin, who also joined us at the top, president of Creative Strategies. And to Katie Kwan, Associate Chair of the UC Berkeley Labor Center, and Kelly McElhaney, Faculty Director and Adjunct Assistant Professor at the UC Berkeley Center for Responsible Business. Another hour of Forum is coming your way. We're going to shift gears and talk about preventive policing. There are new algorithms and mathematical computer analysis that suggest that you can actually, predict where crime's going to be or where hotspots of crimes are going to be. Hope you will join us for that. Thank you for joining us for this. We would not be here without you. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Farrow, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.